Hello, I'm Alistair MacLeod and I'm here on behalf of the Gold Money Foundation. And I have with me today Tom Rustici. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
Tom is Freedom Professor of Economics at the Fund for American Studies, located at Georgetown University. And he's also Professor of Economics at George Mason University. And I understand, Tom, that you have taken some 35,000 students through your course, which is an enormous number.
Oh, yes.
I don't know how you have time to fit that number in.
Yeah.
The other thing I particularly like about Tom is he is a rare example of an economist who actually had a real life before he became a professor of economics. He was in business. So he has the practical experience of microeconomics, about which he has also written, as well as an understanding of the macro. Welcome to this interview, Tom.
Thank you, Alistair.
There's an awful lot going on in the world at the moment to do with money. There's, things seem to be collapsing around us sometimes. And at the moment, the focus is on Europe. Is that something that you're following closely?
Yes, yes. Europe is of great concern to me because what Europe is telegraphing to America, this is, we are going to be down that road in just a few years. We can see our future when we look at Greece.
Yes, and I mean, one of the things that strikes me, and I'd be interested in your view on this, is that the difference perhaps between the euro and the dollar is that the ECB doesn't print euros to pay for government deficits. And that creates huge, great difficulties for the governments in the eurozone. Mm-hmm. We don't seem to have that problem either in the UK or in America. Is that how you see the difference between the two?
Well, I think you're going to see pressure for them to do this, to accommodate in some way. I mean, all of the movement to have eurozone bonds, this is just another step in that direction to try to bail out these countries. England was smart not to join. It was a very smart thing to do. You know, this idea of monopolization of money and centralization of money, while it has the short run allure of stability, it actually creates long run instability. Monopoly is usually not good in much of anything, certainly with money. There will be pressures in the European zone to for countries to get out, or they will have to ratchet it up one more step.
Yeah.
And either way, it either collapses or they will go down the road of inflation. There's just no other way out of this.
It's interesting, and it seems to me there are two separate problems which are perhaps being conflated together. The one is that the individual countries have got these huge great deficits which they are very reluctant to deal with. And the ECB, along with the national central banks, has responsibility for keeping the banking system going.
Right.
And we're now in the situation where if the ECB drops the ball in the banking system, then you know, the ATMs stop working and everything stops.
Right.
So it's a question, I suppose, of priorities for the ECB. Can they really deal with both, which they're being asked to do?
That's a great question because you know the argument is that if these countries began this default process, lots of banks are tied together. And of course, the contagion problem is going to be real. That's part of this issue. And so to salvage that from kind of collapsing, you know, when Greece defaults, it affects France and German banks, and there are ties to French and German banks through the whole system. And so there are these two different problems. And at some point, both of them have to be dealt with. And the priority, I would think, would have to be that these individual nation states have to get their government budgets under control. They have to reduce their government spending. The reality is they won't.
Yes.
They won't. And they will end up in crisis and in chaos, and they will still have contagion, no matter how much they try to stop it. And the entire eurozone is going to go down.
Yeah,
I'm very pessimistic on it.
Yes.
The end. It's if you would have asked me 15 years ago or 10 years ago, I would have said, well, it might hold out 30, 40 years.
Yes,
but I don't think they're going to make it.
No, it is a huge problem, and I suppose also that the very socialist administrations are hanging on to the thought that so long as they can keep their spending going, then their economies won't collapse. Now that's very much a Keynesian thought. Do you see any mileage going down that road?
I think that's what they're going to try and do, but Keynes was wrong. about just about everything in his assessment of macro theory. Spending is not what drives an economy, it's production.
No.
And of course he has it backwards. And you can't consume what does not exist.
No.
It's not there. And the problem is that Europe has a very stagnant productivity, and of course with all of their vast welfare state policies, labor rigidities, and so forth, they have subsidized and encouraged the slowdown of productivity.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is they can spend, but it's a question of on what.
Yes.
Eventually you're led to the printing press. That's the only, that's their only answer.
Yes.
Which again, you can't print that real wealth into existence. You have to produce
No.
it. So my guess is that's what they will do. They'll do appeasing short-run interest groups. They'll put pressure to somehow try to monetize this. And it's a poisonous mix.
Mm.
It is an extraordinarily poisonous mix, and it has a seductive lure to people who think all we have to do is go into more debt and print more money to cover that debt.
Yeah, yes, and you see people like President Sarkozy fighting very hard to try and keep spending up, because apart from anything else, he's got an election
that's right.
coming up, and
that's right.
That concentrates politicians' minds more wonderfully than anything,
right.
perhaps. If, let's say, we wave a magic wand and we assume that somehow the ECB manages to get the Eurozone members to deal with their budgets, and the ECB can then concentrate just on rescuing the banks, presumably, even in those circumstances, there is going to be a problem, because if they achieve that, then the euro itself would be a strong currency against the dollar. But as we all know, the world is on a dollar standard.
That's right.
And then, of course, all the exporters in Europe will be screaming about the currency relationship.
Right.
So the whole thing, I suppose, at the end of the day, once the sideshow in Europe is over, comes back to the dollar. And
That's right.
here we've got enormous budget deficits,
right.
which,
right.
And at the moment there seems to be the possibility that the US economy is sliding, which means that the estimates of budget deficits are going to have to rise, and so on and so forth.
That's right.
So there's a bit of a debt trap, isn't there,
That's right.
Tom?
You know, it's kind of like the Great Depression. You know,
yeah.
the Great Depression had a worldwide contagion of banking collapses.
Mm.
And what was different in the Great Depression, of course, was that there was a deflation, a generalized deflation. My guess is there will be a collapse, but it won't be a deflationary collapse.
Yeah.
It's going to come from the opposite end of the game, where they try to monetize through these
Yes.
real structural problems. And the problem is monetary policy can't accomplish these Mm. things. And so
Yeah.
You're exactly right. All roads in current economic policy in America and throughout the Eurozone Mm. lead to one thing, and that's
printing
more money, and that's not a solution.
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting is that a lot of the deflationists, and I think they're probably diminishing in number, but I'd be interested in your views on that, but a lot of the deflationists point to the 1930s as an example, that actually prices went down and it was deflation and so on. I've always viewed this as being rather different from today, because you had the remnants of the gold standard in that it was a gold exchange standard.
That's
and
right.
so and there was a lot less debt around.
Right.
So you had, I suppose what Keynes would say, that the vanishing of the animal spirits
yeah.
in
yeah.
spades. But without the debt around, prices were actually able to go down. But that's very different now, isn't it? Because there's such a divorce from the values of paper currency mm. and the values of real money in the form of gold or silver, that the situation is rather different. Is that how you would see
there's
it?
There's a lot more leverage out there today
yes.
than there
yes.
was then. The problem you have right now is that while in the 30s you did have a deflationary monetary implosion from the collapse of the money multiplier because of the bank runs.
Yep.
And the bank runs weren't just in America, they were worldwide. And the reason for those banks failing at that time, of course, I've argued, is this Mooney tariff that just sabotaged the whole world trading
yep.
system, which then brought down the banking system. Which then tells us the fundamental problem is central banking in America
yes.
as well as in Europe. and central banks were not able to stabilize that money multiplier,
yeah,
given that kind of hard real shock on the trade sector. And so what I think is different today, I do think is different. I mean, here you have Ben Bernanke at the Federal Reserve, who's a student of the Great Depression. I cite,
yes,
some of his work. And the reality is that the central banking structure has given us a point where if you have another contagion, another collapse, it could be horrendous. And we know that. My only point is, why are we in a central banking structure?
Yes.
Why do we put ourselves vulnerable to these hard exogenous shocks? And part of our shocks can be legislatively induced, it can be monetarily induced. And either way, it still shows up in the same thing.
Yeah.
So I'm very pessimistic, extraordinarily pessimistic over the next 10 to 15 years. I see real rigidities. We have it in our, Chairman Bernanke even made this point. There's only so much monetary policy can do. He's got his foot on the accelerator at warp speed at this point. The unemployment rate is not coming down.
No.
But we also have 99 weeks of unemployment compensation.
Yes.
And we have the president wanting to extend it another year.
Yeah.
Now, we know that the more you replace the wage and the replacement rate, the longer the duration of unemployment.
Yeah.
And now we're having durations of unemployment vastly longer than in the Great Depression on the labor market. They can monetize all they want all day long. That wage is not coming down to a full employment level.
Yes.
And so I always like to say there is some rigidities in that system, but it's not for the reasons Keynes would say. I would argue that what you have is government that is super glue in the price system. And the governments have manufactured massive doses of super glue, and they're squirting it in every possible labor markets and other,
yes,
markets, subsidies and other types of protection. And you sit there and you say, well, then the price system doesn't have to accommodate. It's just being,
yeah,
subsidized into stationary positions when it really needs to move.
Yes, well, I'm very interested in what you're saying there, because there's so many rigidities in the European economies, and it is the whole of the raison d'etre, it seems, for the European Union is to introduce more and more regulations,
right,
not only over employment, but over every product that's produced. I mean, we've laughed over the years about how they're regulating for straight bananas and goodness,
uh-huh,
knows what,
uh-huh,
but this has got to the point where there is a fundamental interference with the benefits of the capitalist system in Europe. Is it as bad as that in America, or just going that way?
We're heading this way. That's why I watch Europe, because where Europe is, we are in five,
yes,
years or 10 years. You know, when they started the European Union and so forth, and there was this great hope of lowering tariffs and freeing commerce and so forth, until politics, which,
yeah,
naturally gets involved in this. We don't have economists running the show. We don't have philosopher kings running the show.
Mm.
And it turns out that interest groups find the seeds of power, and they come up with creative, ingenious backdoor ways to get protectionism and mercantilism,
yeah,
under the guise of food safety, under the,
yes,
guise of French culture and movies, under the guise of there's always something.
Yes.
And you say, you know, the old mercantilists used to just be more honest. They were just getting,
indeed,
special favors. The new ones have all kinds of creative facades out there, shall,
yes,
we say. And so I expect it. I mean, the Eurozone is going to get more and more fortress Europe.
Yes.
And then within it, you're going to see more of those,
yeah,
rigidities. In America, we see it right now. We see it right now. Mm-hmm. We have a president that does not understand economics. We have states that are verged on the edge of bankruptcy.
Yes.
We have a downgrade in our own debt. We have deficits almost 10% of the GDP, and those are likely to get bigger. And they're proposing more of the same.
Yes. And it's interesting.
More bailouts, more regulation.
Absolutely. It's horrifying,
yeah,
really. And it is at this time that the old communist bloc seem to have grasped some parts of capitalism.
Sorry.
But the one thing they don't have is this burden of unnecessary regulation.
Right.
And it makes it a lot easier, I think, for businesses, both in Europe and in America, to relocate their manufacturing. to those areas where some of the means of production, you know, whether it's particularly labor, and the time taken to build a factory and get it up and running is a lot shorter. It's just so much easier to do business. Is this something that you think is a major part of the problem?
Exactly. In America, the cost to comply with federal regulations in the United States, in fact, I gave this lecture yesterday in one of my classes, $1.8 trillion.
Really?
$1.8 trillion compliance cost with federal regulations. Now, this does not include state regulations, city regulations, county regulations, all of the 50 states with their own mandates and rules and so forth. So you look at $1.8 trillion, that's a hidden tax.
Yes,
as,
of course.
As Richard Posner taught us back in the early 70s, regulations is a substitute for taxation. And it's a subtle, indirect, hidden tax, but it has the exact same distributional effects.
Yes.
It's the same burdens, the same depressants on economic activity. So you look at this, and when you actually break these numbers down, for a small business of 20 or less employees, it's over $10,500 per employee per year to comply with federal regulations.
Really?
$10,500 per employee.
Yeah.
For every employee in a firm under 20 employees every year to comply with federal regulations. So you look at this and you say, well, this is going to have absolutely disastrous effects on the labor market.
Yes.
And that was based on 2009 data.
Yeah.
So this doesn't include all the regulations they're writing at this point for financial regulations, healthcare regulations, and all this. That's still to come down the pike. So there's enormous uncertainty of how much this bill is going to be. In the end, we know businessmen don't pay the tax. They collect it. And it's going to end up in lower wages because of the higher unemployment, and we're seeing that. And it's going to end up in higher consumer prices. The capital will leave.
Yes.
The capital will not earn below a competitive rate. It will leave, but the workers will stay unemployed. And then they will draw 99 weeks of unemployment compensation, of which then adds to our deficits, and we continue down this road. So I look at this, and I just, you know, I tell people, $1.8 trillion in compliance costs, that is $6,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. It's $24,000 tax per family of four.
My goodness.
Is huge.
That is
huge. Absolutely huge.
And of course, having been a businessman before, you know as much as anyone that employing someone is actually quite a decision without all this.
That's right.
The idea that businessmen hire and fire, I don't think it's true at all. Really, when they hire someone, they want to hire someone because they want to increase their business.
That's right.
And they need people to help them do it. And it's a very personal relationship, really, between the employer and the employee. And if you introduce all these extra taxes, all the extra regulations, minimum wages, and so on and so forth,
that's right.
You're making that relationship a lot more difficult, I guess.
That's exactly right. What is happening with federal regulations is, to the extent wages do not fall and unemployment does not rise, the compensatory mix that the government is ordering. So if the government says we want more safety in the workplace, well, what's going to happen is wages will fall, monetary wages, to offset this in-kind benefit that is being mandated.
Yes.
And while it may look like the same compensation in dollar value for the same amount of productivity is the same, it is not true because the compensatory mix that workers have bargained for has shifted from their preferences to what some bureaucrat is ordering them to have. Mm. And so in the best case scenario, workers are better worse off because they get their compensatory mix shifted from what they're working for. In the worst case scenario, you have all these transitional costs of people being out of work, factories moving abroad, and all of this inefficiency structured throughout the system. The problem is that many workers, like you're talking about in these conflicts, have no idea what the entrepreneur has to deal with in employing them.
Yes.
They think the gross salary is what they're paid, and that's all it costs the employer.
Yeah.
And in America, it's a 60-40 split.
Yeah.
60% of all compensation on the labor market is in monetary cash wages that are taxable. The other 40% of all compensation in the United States is in in-kind benefits, insurance, other types of benefits, which are tax-free.
Yes.
And so that's the, just even in that mix, they often forget that their employer is having to shell this money out. And then when you add the regulatory costs on top of that,
yeah,
to comply with EPA and OSHA and other regulations, they have no clue of what it costs to employ them. There's a disconnect there. The entrepreneur knows, but the employee doesn't know.
I'm very, very grateful for you taking the time
to do this.
Tom is also, he's an author of some note, and he's very kindly given me one of his works, Lessons from the Great Depression, which I shall read with great interest.
Thank you.
And you also wrote a book on microeconomics as a free market approach. Have I got the title roughly
right?
It's
an anthology of essays, yes, that's correct.
Which, given that you do have business experience and not just a pure economist, I think should be a very, very interesting read as well.
Yeah.
Tom, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Alistair. Yeah, thank you.